You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
I'm Jad Abumrad, sitting in for Leonard Lopate. We tend to think of a dog as being man's best friend, but actually another four-legged animal might at least compete for the honor, and there is a new exhibit at the American Museum of Natural History which makes that argument pretty strongly, that it is the horse. The horse, not the dog, or in addition to dog, that should get that special animal status bestowed by humans. And I have here with me Ross McPhee, who curated the show at the American Museum of Natural History, and I'm glad you could join me today.
It's my pleasure.
So let me ask you, just to start things off, an exhibit about horses in Manhattan, was that a hard sell?
Well, it was and it wasn't. There are a lot of considerations that go into assembling a show. And one of the things that we faced with the horse was how many stories can we actually tell about one species or a small group of species, which is what horses are today. There's only seven different species.
Only
seven, still
really?
With us.
Are those horse-like species? Like
zebras, donkeys, asses.
Okay.
And what we call the horse, which is really the domesticated horse that we think about when we say the horse. That's it. The group used to be considerably more successful than it is today in terms of numbers of species, but still horses have a big presence in many parts of the world, including as endemic species as in Africa and Asia. Anyway, with assembling the show, the big thing for us is always how many interesting good stories can you tell? And for that reason, we often deal with large groups. So there's many kinds of evolutionary or behavioral or what have you sorts of stories that you can develop. When you contract down to one kind of thing, then mm-hmm. that limits you very often. But here's the difference. This is about the horse. There is no mammal, at least, and probably I would argue no species that has been more important in the human story than has the horse. So in that sense, it took care of itself. There were so many things that we could talk about that had a cultural or historical or political kind of import, in addition to all the interesting biological and evolutionary stories you could tell about horses that we didn't have a problem at all.
Are you a horse person yourself?
I'm a horse person only in that I dig up dead horses. I'm a paleontologist. I'm very interested in why there are fewer horses today.
So it's an intellectual thing for you. It's not
an
emotional,
intellectual thing
deep gut
in that
thing.
Sense, but nobody can witness a horse and not be transformed by the experience in the sense of seeing an animal that is so athletic, so strikingly beautiful looking as compared to perhaps a lot of other mammals and a lot of other species generally. And if you have any feel for the historical importance of the horse in the human story, then of course that comes into play as well.
You know, one of the interesting things, I was actually able to go to this exhibit, and, you know, you have the standard group tours that kind of come in and out, and then you see just sort of in the quiet moments, there'll be people huddled in various corners of the exhibit having animated conversations about, like, what saddle do you use, or what's the right mixture of dirt and grit to have on a racetrack. I mean, horses do seem to inspire this real passion among people. Any idea why?
Well, there are a lot of horse lovers in this country, and in that I include not only people who ride or have horses in one sense or another, but people who like to go to horse races. There's a big movement in this country called therapeutic riding, which I knew nothing about prior to...
You have a video in the exhibit, if I remember
correctly.
We do.
And I'll just spend a moment and say something about it because I think it is a wonderful thing. It turns out that there's a number of people with all kinds of health or similar problems who can benefit from riding. It gives them strength in muscle groups that they wouldn't ordinarily use. They get confident. They manage to reach out in ways that would be otherwise very difficult for them. And it's just astounding what role the horse plays. And the only way I can explain it is that there is this magic in the human-horse relationship, this almost inherent affinity that we have for this particular mammal, which facilitates this. It's a wonderful thing to see.
When did that magic relationship begin?
Well, it was a bit rocky to begin with, in the sense that when humans first started dealing with horses, it was not to ride them or milk them or anything like that. It was to hunt them.
No kidding.
Yeah. In Europe, for example, 18,000 years ago, we have a very good record of horses being hunted in central France. And there is no question that people were hunting them. You see the butchered remains. You see very large numbers of butchered remains in campsites. But people were doing the same thing with mammoths and woolly rhinos and so forth at this particular period, no different. But what seems to have happened many thousands of years later is that people realized that this was the one animal out there that could transform them in terms of what I'll call harnessing energy. Mm-hmm. Of course, there were other domesticated animals, but some were very small, as
so
in
horse
the case
was
of dogs,
initially
for
it was
example.
A technological relationship in a way.
In a way, yeah. Now it took, of course, many more millennia and centuries before people learned how to ride horses properly or to hook them up to carts and make that sort of advance technologically. But really, the way it all started out was hunter-prey and then this gathering intimacy, which seems to have changed things. We have, in fact, a diorama specially built for this particular exhibit of work by my co-curator, Sandra Olson, of the Carnegie Museum. She's an archaeologist who works in Kazakhstan in Central Asia. And she's very interested in the earliest stages of horse domestication, when horses were taken over, as it were, by people. And there's a lot of argument about when and where domestication first took place. We think it was between 5,000 and 6,000 years ago. It may have happened on more than one occasion. But what Sandy's very interested in is the process. What are the details? How do you take an animal that's huge by comparison to you, mm-hmm. wild, has nothing to do with you most of the time, and turn it into a creature that's a partner, that is with you because it wants to be, because you provide it with food and protection and all of this sort of thing?
Yeah, I'm surprised.
It's an amazing transformation.
I'm surprised from the horse's perspective that they let it happen. I mean, horses, you have a very interesting sort of skeletal juxtaposition in the exhibit of a horse on its hind legs rearing up and then a human standing up straight. And the horse is 4 or 5 times bigger. Well, that's exaggerating, like twice as big as the human. And it's quite striking then to see that we've somehow been able to wrangle these animals.
It all has to do with behavior. Have you ever thought why zebras were never domesticated?
I've wondered why we don't ride zebras. Yeah.
It has to do with inherent differences between the two kinds of horses, because zebras are horses. They're in the same family, Equidae. But they have very different behaviors than the domesticated horse. The domesticated horses, and this is genetics at base, have a very strong herd instinct with a follow-the-leader kind of behavior that involves a dominant mare and everybody else. So what humans had to learn, and they did learn this very efficiently, is that you had to put yourself in the position of the dominant mare. You had to make other horses realize that you were in charge. Mm-hmm. Having done that, a whole cascade of other behaviors went along with that, including a fair amount of peaceability. If you treated them right, they would treat you right, sort of thing. And using other aspects of horse behavior. Even today, for example, a way that trainers will quiet down a horse that's a bit recalcitrant is to separate it out from other horses, but allow the recalcitrant horse to see the others. And they get bothered because they want to be with the other horses, and they'll realize that in order to do that, they have to do something that the human wants.
I'm Jad Abumrad, sitting in for Leonard Lopate, and I have here with me Ross McPhee, curator of a new exhibit at the American Museum of Natural History called The Horse. So, Ross, let me ask you this. One of the very interesting things about the exhibit was a sort of a video presentation that you have where you show a human skeleton next to a horse skeleton, and you see that, in fact, these skeletons are very similar, and there's just, in terms of the design, a few adjustments that were made to the horse. Can you talk a bit about that, the ways in which sort of the skeletons are in fact the same, but maybe just a different leg here or there, a different type of bone?
Well, this is the interesting thing, isn't it? When you look at a horse, the first kind of question you have is, well, so where's the knee? The proportions are all different. Even if you know already that the numbers and kinds of bones are going to be similar, it's not inherently obvious where the joints are and how they compare to you. And one of the things we wanted to do in the show was, as part of our informal sort of science education brief, to make people realize that horses, as mammals, are very much like us, but what makes them different are the sorts of things that we very highly valued during the domestication process. Not just size, but power. Mm-hmm. These are immensely powerful animals. They are built to run, in fact. This is one of the major sort of adaptive milieu of the family equidae.
And we talk about horsepower. It's something that...
We talk about horsepower. In fact, another part of the exhibit invites you to yank on a dynamometer to see what tiny fraction of a horsepower mm-hmm. you can generate using your full force. And that underlines for people how these animals are animated machines before we had machines of metal and circuitry like we have today. They were our powerhouse. And by virtue of the fact that they're built for speed, they were also useful in ways that things like cattle or oxen would never be.
I see. And horsepower, how did that come about? When was that term introduced, and in what context?
The term itself was as far as I know, introduced during the 19th century, not as a measure of strength, but of force, how much of a specific mass you could move through a certain distance in what fraction of time. And of course, it's been replaced in many parts of the world, other than North America, by metric measures, but it's the same sort of concept.
But when I'm curious, there's a very interesting sort of, not a diorama, but a series of placards where you present the ways in which the horse modernized the urban city. Can you talk a little bit about that and horsepower and how that all came about?
The way to think about this is that all of the jobs done now by machines, particularly machines with internal combustion engines, only a century to a century and a half ago were entirely performed by these animals. So anything having to do with construction, anything having to do with the movement of goods, anything having to do with commerce, anything having to do with war, at least that kind of war, mm-hmm. that was performed by horses. So at the end of the 19th century, for example, even though steam was coming, well, it had been in for a long time, in fact, by that point, and even though the first internal combustion engines were under development, horses still reigned supreme. There were still well over 100,000 horses in New York City doing all of these kinds of jobs. And what's changed is that, of course, the machines have become ever more efficient, ever more able to do tasks that we specifically wanted done. And horses have become outmoded in that sense for the kinds of things that they performed through all the centuries.
When did we begin to race horses? I mean, that's certainly something.
Oh, that's very old. And in fact, we really don't know when racing started. If it involved somebody on a horse's back, then it was a long time after the first efforts at domestication. The first efforts at domestication, in fact, were to keep horses in one place, to use them as stock, really, to continue using them as food animals. It eventually occurred in many places that you could also milk mares and use that as a nutritious food source. But it was a while before people started experimenting with carts, chariots, and ultimately with riding, and then all the gear of riding, saddles, stirrups. These all came along as technological improvements to the basic idea. So horse racing, we in the show use various kinds of art objects in particular to illustrate ways in which horse racing was used for all kinds of purposes and cultures all over the planet in the last several thousand years. So this would involve racing in our sense, where you're trying to test out who's the fastest horse in a kind of gaming atmosphere. But you'd also be running horse races for entirely spiritual reasons, having to do with connecting you and the horse and the people with you with some higher spiritual reality, to show off your status, mm-hmm. in other words. So horses were used in all these manners, which today you have to think about to sort of put yourself in the context where a horse could actually be as important a possession to you as your car.
Oh, that's an interesting way of putting it. And perhaps we'll leave it there. I mean, how long is the exhibit on till?
The exhibit is on until January 4th. It's a traveling show, and by that I mean it's going to go on to various other venues, Chicago, San Diego, Ottawa, and probably many more as the buzz around the show continues to climb.
Well, thank you very much. I'm Jad Abumrad in today for Leonard Lopate. I've been speaking with Ross McPhee, curator of The Horse, a new exhibit at the American Museum of Natural History. We actually have a slideshow of images from this exhibit posted on our show page at wnyc.org, as well as a link to lots more information, so please check it out. Ross, I want to thank you for coming in today.
You're very welcome.